This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Hello.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. Your views really wasn't half bad of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello.
No, you're not flashing back. You're not having a 12-month-old flashback. That was Hello. That was Adele. And if we're listening to Adele, you know we're talking about the Grammys. The Grammys are coming up on Sunday, unless by presidential decree, executive order, they get canceled. And we have gathered the whole squad today to talk about this year's event. We're going to talk about potential controversies. We're going to talk about people who were nominated, shouldn't have been nominated, people who shouldn't have nominated, who were nominated, performances, hosts that aren't really hosts, and your man Kip Winger. Joining me, New York Times chief pop music critic, John Perales.
Hey there.
Pop music reporter, Joe Coscarelli.
Hey, John.
Pop music editor, Karen Gans.
Hello.
Music biz reporter, Ben Cesario.
Hi.
This is maybe the first time the whole squad has ever been in the room at once. It's very moving.
Karen and I are sharing a microphone.
That's how intimate it
is
in the
building.
Yeah, I mean, it has nothing to do with any cutbacks. That's just, we just only have four mics. That's just all it is.
We're talking about music's biggest night, John. Yes, of course we're all here.
Music's biggest night demands maybe one more microphone. Just putting that out there. We're going to start by talking about the Album of the Year category because there are a lot of potential... Storylines isn't quite the right word, but there are potential ruptures that could happen from that category, which, as you know, is the one that's awarded last. So the nominees for this year for Album of the Year are Adele's 25, Beyoncé's Lemonade, Drake's Views, Justin Bieber's Purpose, and Sturgill Simpson's A Sailor's Guide to Earth. Joe and Ben, you recently wrote a piece about the sort of main face-off in this category, which is, and also about of the night, really, which is Adele versus Beyoncé. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on there and why that's had the potential for provocation.
Well, they're two huge albums, two huge, huge stars, and they're both totally adored in the music industry. So it's a real clash of the titans, which is good television.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think this is something that people genuinely want to see who's going to win. Mm-hmm. Where it gets tricky is the racial side of things.
Mm-hmm.
The Grammys have a pretty mixed record over the years of recognizing black performers, mm-hmm. with the biggest awards.
Under 60.
Yes.
If Beyonce's Lemonade, if she had put that out and she was 65, this is no contest. She definitely wins this.
So the risk for the Grammys here is, what if Adele sweeps it and Beyonce is snubbed?
Mm-hmm.
It won't be
Would it
seen...
be a heist?
good one.
Sorry I robbed you.
Yeah, that's good.
Hey, thank you. I'll
if that happens,
week.
You know, it won't simply be that one star beat the other. It will be seen as the white woman beat the black woman, so to speak.
For the lesser album, I would even dare to say. Is there anybody
that's
able...
safer album?
Is there anybody here who thinks 25 is a better record than Lemonade? Garrett, you just made a wild move towards a microphone.
I was just going to say no.
Oh, okay. Whew.
But it's not an undeserving album, certainly. I mean, no one would say...
It's not a bad album.
It's not a bad album. And no one would say this record does not belong in that category.
Is it
Absolutely
the best
not.
Adele record, even? That's a no.
Well, it's the only one that qualifies
no.
this time.
It's the one that's eligible.
Yes, it's the one that was released within
and
the
And it's the one that sold... millions and millions and millions of
physical
CDs.
Copies.
There were these things called CDs.
Yeah,
little
actual
plastic
discs. Remember discs?
I do. I use them to pick my teeth with.
It's also an old-fashioned record. It's beautiful. It's well-crafted and well-made. And it's not really taking major chances. There's not sampling on it. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that Grammy voters tend to like. The Grammy voters, there's a lot of engineers, producers, songwriters, people who work in Nashville, and they like that.
They like a cleanly recorded vocal track, quote-unquote authentic voice.
Played with real instruments.
Real instruments. And
they like ballads.
Not coincidentally, they tend not to like hip-hop type stuff.
No. So you bring up that point, and to that point, this year, an album that was not nominated in the Album of the Year category is Kanye West's Life of Pablo, which was, I think, perceived by many as a bit of a snub.
But maybe didn't get the Def Jam push, which possibly, you know, speculating went to Bieber instead, because it may be more palatable.
I mean, this is crazy. How could anybody think that this Bieber album is Album of the Year material?
I don't know.
That's not a
controversial There were definitely some
opinion.
Ads in Billboard magazine that tried to encourage me to think that.
This is wild.
That's a thing that happened.
Yeah.
But this is Justin Bieber emerging as a serious artist, don't you know?
Yeah.
Can I change this nomination to Bieber's T-Mobile Snapchat ad? Because I think that was a better performance, like kind of on the whole. Can we adjust that last minute? Okay, so we have this potential frisson that's happening in the Adele-Beyonce dyad. But there's a more sort of potentially problematic thing lurking in the Album of the Year category, of course, which is Sturgill Simpson. Sturgill Simpson, Sailor's Guide to Earth. This is his first album on Atlantic. Sturgill is in a sort of current lineage of ornery country neo-traditionalists with a twist.
Outlaw?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that.
Some
In fact, I was trying
that.
Not to say
I know.
That.
I saw you not saying outlaw.
Were you going to call him a disruptor?
That might be true. Check NY Times. Check Times Past. It might have been in there.
I think it was.
Sturgill is actually an interesting case, because here's Sturgill's album, which is probably the most provocative country release of the year, if you want to use that, even that genre framework. I mean, there's a lot of Southern rock in there. There's a lot of blues. And it is, best I can tell, the only album nominated for Album of the Year on which the guitar figures heavily. And I can see Ben, all these people, whether it's in Nashville or engineers or people who enjoy guitars, which are, for those of us who are listening and don't know, guitar is an instrument that has six strings. It can be acoustic or electric. And it was a central composition of American popular music. For, I want to say, it had
Sad
a good
face.
60 or 70 year run.
You know, some of us still like guitars.
Yes, Karen. Yes, Karen, you recently bought a guitar.
Yes.
Yes. That's like when I buy weird vintage clothing. You bought a guitar.
So the Sturgill this year, the argument that you could make in favor of this dark horse Sturgill coming from behind is maybe what we saw with Beck a few years ago.
Yes.
Or with the Arcade Fire.
But if Kanye, is not able to walk on stage, did it really happen?
Yeah. So it's the authentic rock and roll, country, guitar playing choice. But it's also, he may be the beneficiary of a split vote.
Yes. It's also worth saying,
a very common thing to happen.
It's also worth saying that the Sturgill record is actually very good.
Yes.
And
right.
I feel like that actually complicates the narrative, because I think if it does fall his way, there's going to be a lot of like,
who is Sturgill Simpson?
Who the F is Sturgill Simpson?
You should prepare that blog post, right?
Yeah, I mean, Sturgill, you know, there's a Bonnie Bear in the making if Sturgill wins.
Now, John, what do you think about the fact that for Sturgill to somehow take this, he would need Nashville's support, right? As a block. Yet he's known as a guy who hasn't always played nice with Nashville.
No, and it's interesting, because not playing nice with Nashville has become its own motif. And yet there is a fundamental conservatism even to the outsiders in the town. And that's not saying Sturgill, but in terms of like the executives and the musicians and the session players, and they will see Sturgill as someone who reflects a set of values that may not be the current set of values of Nashville, but at one point was a set of values that was valorized in the town, and are probably more likely to vote for that than vote against that over some pettiness about Sturgill being mad about Nashville's treatment of Merle Haggard.
So you're saying he's going to win?
Moving on. I'm just saying, I don't want to read any surprised blog posts like at 11:30 p.m. on Sunday night. That's what I'm saying. If you write about music and you listen to this podcast, do not write that blog post. We're coming for you. Speaking of people who don't always play nice, this is a perfect time to talk about Frank Ocean. Let's listen to Nikes by Frank Ocean. It's the only time this week you'll hear it. So that was Nikes, a song you will not hear on the Grammy Awards in any form or capacity because Frank Ocean is boycotting. Frank Ocean did not nominate himself. Now that he's an independent artist, he does not is not able to benefit from major labels' internal promotions and marketing teams, part of the responsibility of which is to nominate artists for Grammys and place advertisements for voters and so on. So Frank's not coming. And the lack of Frank causes a potential validity issue for the Grammys, because here you have one of last year's most critically acclaimed records and widely loved. That doesn't appear anywhere at all. I thought it was strange the Grammys didn't kind of throw a weird rider onto the nomination to just say, yeah, we know you didn't nominate, but like, well, we're just going to nominate you anyway. Like, that's what, I don't know, that's what authoritarian.
There are rules here. Come on now.
Dog, that's what authoritarian regimes are for. That's like literally what they were designed for.
An executive order?
Yeah. So, but that didn't happen. But it did bring up a larger picture about how the Grammy and the Grammys and the Recording Academy typically deal with contemporary black music, R&B and hip hop. I think, you know, Kanye not being nominated in Album of the Year is sort of reflective of the bigger point that I think Frank was trying to make. And a thing that I did, which is coming out on Sunday in Arts and Leisure, is look back at the last 5 or 6 years of Grammy nominations in those categories to try to identify some weak spots in terms of what was nominated and what should have been nominated.
Were they all named Eminem?
Well, you know, that was so ubiquitous that it almost there was no point over kind of like being overbearing about it. So it's a parenthetical. There's an Eminem parenthetical in there. But let's say the year that in the best rap album category, Iggy Azalea and Macklemore were both nominated. That was strange. And I think the beginning of some of the anti-Grammy sentiment that we see really coming to a head right now. Jay-Z gets nominated just for farting.
Just for living it,
you know, making a Samsung deal. Jay-Z gets nominated, which is a strange thing. And, you know, I can remember a time when Jay-Z was not welcome at the Grammys. And now the fact that he's become a genre elder, he's a very, very safe thing. And just imagine all the dads who are voting for Jay-Z in any best. Not this year, but in previous years.
He doesn't just get nominated. I mean, he's won more than 20 Grammys, I think. And it's worth pointing out that Kanye has won.
He sips Doucet out of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Kanye has won 21 Grammys. Beyonce has won 20 Grammys, but almost all of them are in the genre categories, right? R&B and hip hop. Almost never in the album of the year level. Beyonce has lost twice.
Are you calling Jay-Z and Kanye West the Jimmy Stir of hip hop? Is that what you're doing?
I guess I am, John.
All
you
right.
Got me.
Google that. If you don't know what that is, Google that. Ben wrote a very cool piece about that a few years ago. So yes, these genre categories. But then when I was looking, especially in the R&B categories, what exactly is genre anyway? I'm not the type to get super bent out of shape about categorization. I understand that different people have different phylum that they file music under. I understand that. But I can assure you that best urban contemporary album is not a phrase that had been uttered by any person, perhaps in the entire country, prior to it becoming a Grammy category about 5 or 6 years ago. And if you read the news accounts at that time, the interviews, what they're basically saying is, we understand that there are more traditional type R&B singers in a more 1970s, 1980s vein, and then there are people who are trying to push the boundaries at the younger, more modern edge of the genre, and that category is designed for them. But if you look at how nominations are actually meted out, some years Beyonce's in one category, and some she's in the regular R&B category, and some years she's in the other category.
Sometimes she's more urban than
yes.
others, John.
Yeah. Well, okay, you said that. So, I didn't say it.
So tell us who's nominated in that urban contemporary category, because it really runs the
in life or this year?
This year.
Okay. Well, okay. Let's talk about both of those categories: best R&B album and best urban contemporary album. So best R&B album, BJ the Chicago Kid, three-time Grammy winner Layla Hathaway, Terrace Martin, Mint Condition, and Maya. Five artists who have nothing to do with each other at all, except that they broadly make R&B music by some definition that has been generally employed in the last 40 years. Best Urban Contemporary Album. Sure, why not? Lemonade, Beyonce. I mean, we could just stop
Give
there.
It to her.
Yeah, we could just stop there. Anyway, Beyonce, Rihanna, Anderson .Paak. Maybe that's R&B record, maybe it's not. King, and Gallant, or Gallant. It's Gallant.
Sure.
Sure, whichever it is. Which actually is a record I like quite a bit, but unfortunately has no chance of winning in this category. Neither of these arrangements, and also in many of the last 5 or 6 years that I was looking, doing deep dives on, tell me anything about the contemporary state of R&B. They don't really talk about where the innovation centers are. They really, I think, overweigh the importance of what I think of as adult contemporary R&B and like classic soul revival R&B. This does feel like a niche category like polka or, you know, regional American music or the Hawaiian category, like any of those categories that got kind of like meshed into one.
But John, you have to remember, this isn't just in R&B. This is in every Grammy category. You have a big bulge of old voters.
Sure.
And they like stuff that sounds like the records they were making 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like these glitchy, sampley, auto-tuned, how dare they sound artificial, urban records.
And the other thing worth noting is that these categories get no love. These are all awarded before the show, generally.
Yes, that's right.
At the
awarded
Grammys.
Yesterday, you're
not going to see Gallant lose on TV. That's not even...
Well, you might, because this might be the only... Actually, Joe, if Beyonce is going to get washed in the main category, televise this category. So we may get to see Gallant get washed.
But I just wanted to ask you, so I mean, I read your piece. Can you...
Damn.
Well, I read it before anybody else did.
Yes.
But what would you say that the Grammys could do to fix the R&B situation? What are your recommendations?
Funny you should ask.
Yes.
And if you are inclined to read in the Sunday Arts and Leisure section, that answer is laid out for you. Okay, I think it's two things, right? Specifically R&B you're talking about, or both?
Both.
Okay. We'll start with R&B. R&B, I think, has been mutating in a pretty interesting way over the last few years. If that's a mutation that the Grammys are taking seriously, and keep in mind the Grammys tends to be slow to take things like that seriously, then I think urban contemporary, if that's the nomenclature they're sticking with, should be very explicitly focused on emergent talent. It can be almost a best new artist of R&B. That's how it could operate. In the best R&B album, that, in my mind, is maybe your more mainstream, pop-focused, your Beyoncé's, your Rihanna's, Usher, Chris Brown, things like that. Then maybe the solution is actually to have a different category for traditionalist performances or adult contemporary.
So like, you're actually arguing for more categories, the Grammys?
I got to be honest with you. When I was looking back year over year, in 2010, there were 8 R&B categories. In 2011, there were 4. In 2012, there were 5.
They used to have female and male as separate categories.
Yeah, right. They are trying to streamline, so your idea is not going to work.
It's fine. You're not the first person to tell me something like that in my career.
But but also, John, a lot of the Beyonce, Rihanna, these people are using the innovators. These people are using, mm-hmm. you know, they're bringing in the fringe
sure.
genius producers to be on their albums. So you're not going to, there's always going to be a big star doing something strange and interesting.
Right. But in a category like R&B, where there is actual creative movement and innovation that's happening at
lots
a pretty fast clip at the sort of like smaller or fringier end of the genre, to basically have a category where we say, we acknowledge that and Beyonce. That's not really doing a favor either to Beyonce or to the people who are innovating on the fringe. So I think something that does a better job of separating those is probably a strong thing.
You're asking the Grammys to do a favor for somebody innovating on the fringe.
I'm not I don't expect anybody to be listening, Neil Portnow. You know what I mean? Like, I don't expect them to actually be listening, but I'm allowed to have a dream.
While we're talking about the deep genre categories.
Why, yeah, let's talk about
Can I ask you, Karen, what the deal is with the best rock performance category?
Karen, what's really good with rock? Karen, as the only person at this table, I assume, who bought a guitar in the last 10 days, can you tell us what's going on with rock?
Yes. Also, just let me explain that I was doing a little panic shopping, and I bought a vintage Melody Maker, and it's very exciting. Okay.
And next week on the podcast, Karen will be here to serenade us.
Yes, she's got the E chord down.
I'm practicing. Yes. So best rock performance is an interesting category. I'm going to do this quickly.
Yes.
When the nominations came out, you know, a couple of them seemed obvious. It was 21 Pilots.
Heard of them.
I've talked about them on the podcast several times.
Yes.
And I do know their names are Tyler and Josh. I just wanted to point that out.
Okay.
I've not known their names in the past. And David Bowie got a nomination. And then there were three.
Definitely two artists who are in.
They
the
have
same
a lot in common, David Bowie and 21
when
Pilots.
When I listen to 21 yeah. Pilots album, I often think, there's a lot of Bowie in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a main inspiration. But then there were three other people that were nominated that was a little more head scratchy. So one was Beyonce with Jack White, that song Don't Hurt Yourself from Lemonade. And then one was a Disturbed song, but it was actually a cover of The Sound of Silence that they performed on a late night show, Conan O'Brien's late night show, to be specific. And then there was an Alabama Shake song that they had also performed on television on Austin City Limits. So you might be saying to yourself, what is this category?
What I may be saying to everyone at this table and to all of our listeners is I'm fairly certain that no one's heard Disturbed cover Paul Simon with an orchestra on Conan, so now would be a perfect time to listen to that. And the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign lashed out its warning, and the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls, and a whisper in the sun of silence.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. I have been trying to understand changes in migration. So I traveled with photographer Federico Rios to the Darien Gap, this hot, mountainous, 70-mile stretch of jungle straddling the border of Colombia and Panama.
We're hiking through a river, just like covered in mud.
Many used to think that this route was impassable, but thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the Darien, almost all in the hopes of making it to the United States. We spent 9 days hiking through the gap and weeks building trust and relationships with migrants, with smugglers, with migration authorities to even be able to do this reporting. We interviewed hundreds of people who have made this journey to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths to find a new life. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Okay, so now again, if everybody has like gone and gotten a glass of water and soothed themselves, that was Disturbed covering Paul Simon on Conan.
With a 15-piece orchestra. And it actually became the most viewed Conan musical clip.
That seems to say a lot more
online
about Conan than about Disturbed.
Yeah.
Just a guess.
I haven't listened to Disturbed in a long time, so I enjoyed that.
I say this as someone who thought Disturbed was like mid-key fire in like 2002.
So what's it all about, Karen?
So how does this happen? Well, first, the category itself, it honors the artist. Yeah, so it's not about whoever wrote the song. It's about the artist performing the song. It just seems like maybe people did not know what to nominate. Both the Alabama Shakes and the Disturbed song would not be eligible on their own because the albums on which they came out were not in the eligibility period. And it seems like their labels just really wanted these songs to have a shot.
Is this a good time for a brief The More You Know sidebar, which is there are performances that are nominated at the Grammys and there are songs that are nominated at the Grammys. And when a song is nominated, it is a songwriter award. So it is meant to celebrate the people who wrote the words and also composed the music. When it is a performance that is nominated, it is an artist category, and it is meant to celebrate the artist, singer, band, rapper who delivered the performance.
This is true. And an addendum, More You Know, is how songs get nominated or how anything gets nominated is that record companies get together and they have meetings where they strategize. And they're like, we want to maximize our nominations and our wins.
So these AKA Illuminati.
Yes. So these are the people we're going to nominate. And this is the kind of budget we're going to put behind lobbying for these things to win. So Rob Tannenbaum, who wrote this story for us this week about this category, reported that there are also, once all the nominees are submitted, that genre subgroup committees meet to discuss them and see if there's any shenanigans going on. And that the rock genre committee met to discuss whether or not that Beyoncé song is a rock song. They decided it was.
It's got a guitar.
Yes, it's Jack White.
You can learn it.
Yeah,
I'll put performing it on next week's podcast.
Yes. okay, if it wins, you have to.
If it wins,
that.
I will.
That's actually
that.
A requirement.
It's a Facebook Live, actually. Yeah. It's more than that. But, I mean, it's a head-scratcher. I mean, the category makes absolutely no sense. And does it say anything to any of you, John Perellis, chief pop critic, does it say anything to you about what rock music sounds like in 2017?
In a word, no. I mean, it's just kind of random. It's like, but they're pretending like nobody made a rock record.
Exactly.
When actually there is a punk revival going on.
Right.
There's a punk,
on a major label, though. Like last week's podcast notwithstanding. Like punk at the margins notwithstanding, on a major label, and last year, I remember we all had very big conversations in advance of last year's Grammys about a band that was very aptly named Highly Suspect.
Which is nominated Emphasis again this sus. Year.
Shouts to 300 Records and the mercenaries at 300 Records who have literally conjured Grammy nominations 2 years running for a band that has no hits, hit-free.
I think they have hits on the rock chart, but that's about it.
Shrug.
Asterisk. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if you even look at the best rock album category, we're talking about Blink-182, California, fine album. I don't know what it says about its moment. Panic at the Disco, Weezer,
Cage the Elephant.
Time out. That's a really good Weezer album.
Okay. Hope it wins. Also, Gojira.
And Gojira. This is just...
Cage the Elephant isn't a half-bad rock band, you guys.
Was the Fall Out Boy record
They're no Young the Giant.
That
previous year, okay. I think. But just head-scratching abounds in these rock categories.
One thing I will say about it, though, is that the rock category used to be head-scratching because you had to be 60 years old in order to qualify, was basically the message that you got. If Neil Young made an album, it was going to be on there. Mm-hmm. If the Rolling Stones made an album, it was going to be on there.
Which
no
it will
question.
Next year, most likely.
And, there are some artists who got their first Grammy Awards many decades into their career.
Was that what happened with Jethro Tull with the best metal?
That was metal performance,
Grammy?
Right? Yeah. So it's just you're scratching the other side of your head now.
But now we're looking at young bands, and it's Weezer and Blink-182. Yeah. So, I think we could go another generation beneath that and maybe find some rock albums that deserve to be there.
These committee things have become a weird side of Grammy intrigue because on the one hand, they seem to be doing good work by weeding out complete garbage, things that utterly don't belong. On the other hand, we get these strange situations, and there's also the frequent occasions where the five nominees seem to have been chosen to represent five particular constituencies of something or other, where G. Willikers, the five world music albums seem to be, you know, a Hawaiian album, a Brazilian album, an African album, you know, something like that. So you get the sense of an invisible hand in there kind of guiding some of this, even though they're supposed to be blocking things that utterly don't fit. And this has kind of blown up in some of the industry commentary about what's really going on with these committees.
Ben, you know better than I do, but doesn't it also have something to do with the voting? Doesn't everybody get to vote for the top four record, album, song, new artist, and then you get X categories to vote in?
Did you
so
have
the 20
of the...
people voting for a rock record can get that Gojira album in there?
Did you, was it
You're
in your
right,
piece?
That's the way it works.
Were you, was in your piece, Ben, were you saying that this year the number of other categories that members can vote in has been lowered?
Not my piece.
Oh, I feel like I read that recently, that it used to be you can vote in the main categories and also 20 categories, and now you can vote in the main categories and only 15 categories as a way of kind of basically making sure Macklemore doesn't win.
I think the number's lower. I don't know offhand. But that is basically true.
So at the opposite side, we've talked about some of the Grammy categories that have problematic nominations, but one of the interesting side benefits of problematic nominations are these weird kind of like, oh, that's so strange that thing or person or band was nominated. And maybe we should have like a quick speed round of artists that we did not believe were going to get nominated or a little bit baffled by their nominations. I'll start. I promised Joe a lusty defense of Mike Posner, and here we are.
That was my pick.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I know everybody's scrambling and scratching that off.
Can you do a lusty defense in 60 seconds?
I can do it in probably 6 seconds.
All right.
So Mike Posner's nominated for I Took a Pill in Ibiza.
Song of the Year.
Yes. I would like to go on record as saying the non-remixed version of this song is actually not bad. And the album is also not bad. I'm going to get such flame for this.
I mean, if you could see the side eye that's happening in the studio.
Okay, I also vividly remember being in a parking lot in Los Angeles and calling Karen. I was on vacation, and I, for some reason, decided to listen to the Mike Posner album. And I called Karen in a Fatburger parking lot, and I was like, you know what? I got to write about this record. There's something going on
here. I'm just going to say, free Seeb, who did the remix, who is the only reason anybody's ever heard this song.
Seeb is what, like 9 years old?
I
like
really hope
years old?
That... Yeah.
Somewhere.
Seeb, again, I don't know, male, female, I don't know anything about you. I hope you're at the Grammys.
Seeb, we're toasting to you, for sure. Okay, so there's Mike Posner. What else we got? Anyone?
I'm actually glad that Anderson .Paak got some
there
love.
There you go.
Because he's really talented.
Mm-hmm.
He's really throwing things together that people aren't throwing together. Mm-hmm. He's
what kind of things?
Okay. Okay, he's a drummer, singer, rapper. So you've got sort of old school funk and very modern, weird electronic R&B. You've got his crazy, complex, sad autobiography, and you've got Hanging Out at the Beach. And you've got just a lot of musical talent going on in there, and he's not the kind of person the Grammys tend to notice this early in their career.
And you've got a little piece on him in Thursday's paper.
These things
right?
happen.
So I'll go ahead and say that entire Best New Artist category is pretty stacked.
Yes,
and in addition to Anderson .Paak, who John just mentioned, you know, you get Chance the Rapper in there, who I think is probably the most deserving and represents, you know, a real future of the music industry. And he's performing at the Grammys. I think it could be a big coming out party for him in terms of the, you know, middle
Play
America.
Me off a piece of that. Best
Maybe we'll see
artist.
His Kit Kat bar commercial. But then you also have a pair of young female country singers in there, Maren Morris and Kelsey Ballerini.
Reflecting two different wings of contemporary country, which, you know, the Grammys is like not very good on country music, generally speaking. The idea that Sturgill is nominated in Album of the Year is kind of a very big look for them. And also the fact that Maren and Kelsey, who do two very different things, but do each of those things exceptionally well, I think is very promising. And they also bumped Alessia Cara out of the running.
And I'll go ahead and say, just to finish the thought about Best New Artist, Maren and Kelsey split the vote. Anderson and Chance split the vote.
Chainsmokers!
That means our Best New Artist winner are none other than the Chainsmokers.
Cash me outside.
Should we listen to some Chainsmokers?
Don't let me down, Chainsmokers featuring Daya.
In my head, darling, I hope that you'll be here when I need you the most.
So that was the Chainsmokers. I'm sorry for subjecting everybody to the Chainsmokers. That was the Chainsmokers. At least it was the best song. A person who's probably secretly pretty into the Chainsmokers is James Corden, who is this year's Grammys host. Ben, you interviewed James Corden, and an interesting thing that I took away from that interview, something I hadn't quite thought about before, is just how maybe irrelevant the host of the Grammys is, especially as compared to other hosting opportunities on other equivalent award shows. Talk to us about what are the requirements and what's expected of a Grammy host, and why Corden is possibly set up to either thrive or flounder.
Well, the host is only on camera for like 15 minutes, something like that. And most of the show is performances. For years, they didn't even have a host on the Grammy Awards. And you may have forgotten that LL Cool J was the host for the last 5 years.
LL Cool J definitely forgot.
So there's not that much of a job. That said, they're going to carve a little more time out for Corden. Mm-hmm. I think we're expecting him to do a skit or something like that. And, you know, his show is on CBS. The Grammys are on CBS. And so it's very much a, you know, corporation saying, hey, kid, you know, I got something for you. And so they want to exploit that. It makes sense. But they don't want to take screen time away, you know, from their Prince tribute or their George Michael tribute or any of the other flashy things they've got. So it's a weird position for James Corden that he's a face, he's likable, but he's really not going to get that much of an opportunity to make an impression.
It's also very brave of the Grammys after 5 years of LL Cool J hosting to pass the hosting responsibilities to a white male late night talk show host. I just want to say that's just a very, very
groundbreaking,
bold gesture.
And now, Ben, you know, this is sort of going to be the big elephant in the room with the Grammys. Do you think we can expect a lot of political jokes from James Corden? Is he going to be the one to sort of set the tone and go at Donald Trump in whatever his opening is, even if it's not a monologue?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe he'll crack a little bit of a joke. I mean, he told me he doesn't want to get political as a British guy recently arrived in this country. He doesn't really feel...
It definitely doesn't work for John Oliver.
The big question is whether we're going to get that from the artists, whether the people who go up to the mic are going to use it as a soapbox. We saw it at the Golden Globes. We saw it at the SAG Awards. It's kind of the theme of the moment. There doesn't seem to be that much of a vibe that I'm getting so far. But that said, you know, who knows what
I feel like
say.
If Adele wins, then no. And if Beyonce wins, yes.
But if Beyonce performs, which she's rumored to be doing, she's the type typically to make her statements that way. So I think, you know, it could come, you know, thinking back last year to Kendrick Lamar's performance of Black or the Berry, where he, you know, had a black man in prison garb and chains. And, you know, that was something. And the climate wasn't as hot then maybe as it is now. So I think something like that could resonate more this year, whether we get it from Chance, who's supposed to perform.
Tribe Called Quest
Beyonce,
is performing.
Tribe Called Quest.
Thankfully, without Dave Grohl. What a relief.
Katy Perry.
Yes.
Longtime Hillary Clinton supporter.
Your wokest bae.
And Lady Gaga, who was, in my opinion, you know, sort of muffled and couldn't really do anything political at the Super Bowl, where people thought that she was going
Gaga.
To make a big statement. Well, you know, it wasn't really the venue where that was possible. There's just too many corporate things, you know, wrapped up in that.
Karen Gans is the littlest monster with the hottest take on Lady Gaga's Super Bowl performance. I think we should go out on something that is something that we all, I think, overlooked when the Grammy nominations first came out, and that is perhaps the least likely nomination of all, which is C.F. Kip Winger of everybody's favorite hair metal band, Winger,
yes.
Who was nominated for a classical music Grammy for his composition, Conversations with Nijinsky.
Great news for the classical community.
I bet it's Fuego.
Alive and well.
And so I think to go out, we're going to make sure it's Fuego. Here's Kip Winger, Conversations with Nijinsky. Thank you for listening to the New York Times podcast. Thank you to all my guests, Ben Cesario, Karen Gans, Joe Coscarelli, John Perellis. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us your Grammy joys and failures at podcast@nytimes.com. Subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you get your audio content. And we will be back probably immediately after the Grammys on Monday to talk about everything we are wrong.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.